actually the angle I'm always going for with podcasts, is mm-hmm. not to explain guests or the theme or what I decided to talk about, and just let it be more organic.
Oh, and so nice.
It opens up to be perfect in a situation like this.
Perfect. Okay, that, yeah, I have
slap on headphones. We'll just have a conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just I'm like, this is exactly how it is. I have no idea what your theme is.
Or... That's fine. You don't have to, because we don't even have to, I don't even have to touch it.
That's cool. Right.
I have it written down just in case, but yeah. Nice. But we had left off talking about Star Wars. So let's go back to Star Wars for a second. And
I'm not a big expert on Star Wars. I've seen the movies. It took me a long time to kind of get the main points of the plot. Mm. But specifics, you lost me.
Well, fortunately, there's a site called Wikipedia. And it has, it's an exhaustive Star Wars encyclopedia.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and then people just like, Wikipedia, you can edit it, and so you just add to it or correct things. So there's the beauty on this one is things that are non-canonical, like when Disney took over, they're like, we're not gonna be putting those in the movies. It's still up there for reference, but it's not something that's part of the now Star Wars universe.
Like that scene you were telling me that they just don't show that scene of Princess Leia anymore.
So it was even called Slave Leia. So she's chained up wearing brothel gear, right? And when I was a kid, that was like a cardboard cutout that was like at every single comic book store and every single nerd place that was there. And it wasn't not uncommon that people had it at their house. Mm. They don't sell it anymore. I'm sure you can find it online, but no, they 86 that with the quickness.
That's crazy. Now,
I mean, it makes sense, but just in terms of their audience shifting a bit because it's a Disney, they're like, no, we're not gonna have that. But back to strong female leads, I have it ranked. Princess Leia is up there. Terminator.
Right? Oh, definitely.
Ridley from Alien, Alien franchise.
You know, I wasn't a big fan of the Alien franchise, but I don't know if I was. I know. I don't know if I was too young to like the goriness of the alien, you know, like I was pretty young and I was like, oh, I don't know, like I don't want to ever meet those kind of aliens.
Yeah, that's nightmare fuel.
Yeah.
If you ever
were, but I like the Blade. We were talking about Blade.
Go back, Blade.
Like,
okay.
I was like, Blade, he was badass.
Okay.
Like,
definitely. And I saw that in theaters when I was a kid and immediately wanted to become a samurai. I gotta sign up for martial arts. I gotta learn this just in case it goes down.
Right.
When I get older and I go to a club and all of a sudden blood starts coming out of the water sprinklers, I won't be nervous because I learned everything from Wesley Snipes.
I mean, even as a woman growing up, I traveled a lot, and so carrying a pocket knife, I always felt very blade-like. Like, I feel like such a badass. I could use a pocket knife, but obviously I'd never want to use it. But
my question for you is, did it have a safety on it where it would spin and then take someone's finger off, like in my man's blades?
No, not that intense. It was a pretty long pocket knife, but it was just a regular knife. I mean, I'm a female traveling alone through the country. You never know.
Oh, where'd you go?
I went through all 48 continental states.
Whoa. What did that look like? You were going up, down, across the United States?
I went across. Like, I went from Cali, San Diego to, like, the Keys, so to Florida all the way down.
Oh, the southern route.
Yeah, the southern part of Florida. Then I went back up towards, like, New York and then crossed over to Chicago because I have a lot of family there.
Same.
Oh, nice.
Where in Chicago?
They're from... like downtown area, Cicero, which is pretty close by. I have a lot of family right on the border of Indiana and Chicago.
Cool.
But yeah, when I go out there, I mean, I think I travel. I have like 5 different sections of family, so I have no idea. Cool. I have some more in the southern, or I guess technically it's the middle of Illinois, but it's south of Chicago. And then I have family that live right in Chicago, right by downtown, and some in
right on the loop. My grandparents were the first black couple in Skokie, Illinois.
That's
pioneers.
Wow. That's awesome. That's crazy. Yeah, one of my aunts was an Uber driver, and so she would give me rides around Chicago, telling me all the history of like different places and buildings. And so I grew up with a lot of appreciation for Chicago culture. It's just so different than LA.
Absolutely.
It's so different.
Those high rises are no joke. Like, you know, moving on up, George and Weezy, right? And that apartment complex is not just apartments. Like, originally it had a bowling alley in it. It had a sports thing, and like, no one really had gyms like that in a building.
Right? It
worked out to be like almost like a mini mall with luxury apartments on top of it.
Right? Wow, that's
And then
cool.
It got renovated and it changed into mostly apartments and office spaces.
Mm.
And then it just mostly turned into apartments. Yeah. So Chicago, what a city. What a city.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah.
Except in the summer. Not the biggest fan, but it's... I'm not a fan of anywhere in the summer.
California might be the place for you then.
That's the closest static. To
just worry about earthquakes and fires.
Oh yeah. I don't mind the earthquakes that much. I don't know if it's because I don't think I've ever been close enough to feel one really, you know, destroy my property or anything where it scares me. It's just like rocking yourself a little while.
That's a massage right there.
Yeah, man. It doesn't feel too bad.
Some people pay good money for that. Yeah.
Seriously.
I'll tell you for free.
Yeah. fires do scare me. I lived in Santa Barbara when they had the big mudslide. Uh-oh. I was out there around that time, so that definitely was scary. But that's about it. Otherwise, good weather. I mean,
yeah, consistent.
Cali, yeah,
consistent.
It's expensive for a reason.
Yes,
we pay for luxury out here.
If you like consistency and weather that feels like summer all year long, California is a place to be.
Yes.
If you are trying to live that active lifestyle and like, oh, I can go for a walk, I go for a run, I can go for a jog, I can bike ride, I can do... Yeah, California is always going to have that.
Yes.
You can go in the winter and fine.
The best thing. It's like, whether you're a mountainy person or a beach person...
We got that.
We have it.
We got that.
Yep. Yep. All I'm over. Thinking about buying a bike at some point soon. I had one when I was in... I mean, I went to Santa Barbara and I was out there for like 6 years. And that's all I didn't even have a car until I was 23 because I just didn't need one. I had a bike. I biked everywhere. Took the bus. It was free public transportation.
It's free?
Hey. For students. Yeah, it was free. Okay. So I was a student at the time. And even afterwards, I mean, it wasn't too expensive. Just walking, biking everywhere. I miss that.
Oh,
like,
cool.
Yeah, being in LA in the city is just, it's not the same. You're not safe to bike everywhere. Yeah, you can't walk.
That's so one of the things they teach you in security is how to keep your head on a swivel, right?
Yeah,
looking out and then assess what the situation looks like. So they say, zone white is no threats whatsoever, and that only happens at your house, right?
Facts.
So the second you open your door, you go into yellow. So it's like, hey, look at your surroundings, people are driving cars. So not everyone stays on the road. You know, some people hit the curb. Some people don't stop at stop signs. So just be aware of what other people are doing. And then next level up is orange, where it's there could be danger. So you need to be prepared for what you're going to do. Right.
Okay.
So if like say you're at a bar or at a banquet hall and people are starting to yell and they're not dancing anymore. Right. And then someone breaks a glass. You're an orange and you're already like, okay, how do we de-escalate this? You don't have to wonder if it's going to happen. People are already getting rah-rah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then red is... You're in it and fists are flying. Maybe there's a gun. Maybe there's a knife. It's already out. It's not a threat. It's out.
Right.
That's red. But then to be able to reorient yourself to go back down to yellow is what you need to do.
Mm.
Right. And then actually... there's a correlation with that with people who have PTSD.
Yes.
Right? Because instead of being in that white zone, they're in orange or red.
Like as a default?
As a default. And you can't sustain that.
Right.
Like cortisol levels will be through the roof, you'll be stressed out, gaining weight, and then ready to fight the drop of a hat.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that, ever heard of the term OODA loop? OODA loop?
No, I haven't.
It's like observe, man, I forget. it's observe, then I forget what the next O is, then it's decide, like decision what you're gonna do.
Okay.
And then reassess, and I'm slaughtering it pretty badly.
It's all good.
But the whole point is, you can look it up online, OODA loop. Mm-hmm. And it's the cycle that your mind has to go into when you're on the lookout for things. So not everything is a threat. It might be perceived as a threat, but you don't want to just react. It's like, oh no, we're in red zone right now.
Right.
No, it's okay.
Like someone runs at you and you start running away like they're going to kill you. You're like, I just wanted to hug you.
I just wanted to hug you. Yeah. So that's actually, I'm glad you brought that up, because dogs do that, right? So the way dogs talk, they just bark.
Right.
And if they're really excited, they run towards you.
Yes.
And so if you go in a fight or flight with a dog that you don't know, he might think you're playing. And like, oh yeah, I'm going to chase him. Like a nip, but getting a little bite, a nip is not the same thing as sinking your teeth in.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
And so many dogs have been put down because they attacked someone. But it was like, oh no, they were just saying hi.
They were playful, like, and they were so excited they didn't measure their strength. And
yes.
They bit you a little too hard.
Yes. Bit a little too hard, and feelings got hurt. Now Fido is no longer with us. It's at the farm, right?
Right.
But that's something for...
I mean, that happens to humans too. You're saying, like, absolutely. PTSD. That's
absolutely
basically what it is. Like, you perceive this not threatening thing as this immediate danger.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, people who are, like, driving the Humvee, right? Or maybe they're driving the boat, or they're driving the helicopter. But it's mostly when you're in the caravan and you're going through whatever town. They say when the person in front of you starts to break, be prepared for an ambush. Right? So, oh, hey, all of a sudden you're going to kill mode because the person in front of you might have a bomb, or it might be a setup to trap everyone who's on the envoy, right?
Okay.
And so could you imagine doing that and then going to LA?
Driving in the 405.
You're like immediately triggered. You're like, so that's not good. But the whole thing is, you can retrain your brain, right? So one of those things would be saying, okay, let me observe, let me look around. Okay, am I in Afghanistan? I'm not in Afghanistan. I'm on the 405. It's rush hour traffic.
That's funny you say that, because you don't know this about me, but I actually did, I've been a personal trainer for a long time. And I work with people with disabilities, mostly people with autism. And so a lot of my research and work and what I do for fun, right? Reading scholarly articles.
Nice.
I do a lot of work on the nervous system and like re-regulating your nervous system and anxiety, because I had anxiety for a really long time, and breathing exercises. And I went into CrossFit, which super heightened my anxiety, which I understand now why, but I had to start training very differently. I've gone from like powerlifting to bodybuilding to CrossFit to strongman stuff to figure out like how to regulate my nervous system and be able to control my breath, so that when I'm in the middle of an anxiety attack, I can slow down my breath, slow down my nervous system enough to turn on that cognitive brain where I can think of like, wait, what am I scared of right now? Right? Like, what is actually like making me hyperventilate? And once I could turn my brain off, then I can talk myself down and tell myself, like, this is not real. Like, you're not really in danger. Mm-hmm. Like, close your eyes, like, focus on your breath. Like, whatever I have to tell myself in the moment to really hype myself up. Like, I'm doing a great job. Wow. You're good. Calm yourself down. But in the middle of, like, this really heightened state, like, you can't even get to that place. You can't even think of, you know, let me assess the situation. Like, am I in this dangerous place? Like, your nervous system takes over your thinking brain.
Yes. Absolutely.
So severely that, you know, and I think, and that's a lot of the support that I would do, is I would work with people, you know, that were labeled as very challenged by their autism or by their, you know, neurological differences. And it always stung me and like rubbed me the wrong way, like to label people as like, oh, you're high functioning or low functioning. Because I'm like, man, there are times when I'm very low functioning. Like when I'm in the middle of an anxiety attack, I don't ask me to think about anything. Like I don't even know how to sit down by myself, you know. It could get that to that point. So I'm curious, like, you're talking about, you know, your nervous system. Oh, sorry. Yeah, I mean, regulating your nervous system enough to be able to like observe and assess where you're at and calm yourself down. Like it takes a lot of practice.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So how did you get to that point where there probably was a time where you didn't see it as something that was out of the ordinary? You're just like, oh, this is what life is like. And then there was an incident, and then, oh wait, hold on, this is something that's reoccurring. I think I might need help adjusting this habit or the way that I react. What was that?
Yeah, like? So I was in college, and this incident actually pushed me, or like motivated me, to go to like student health, right? Mm-hmm. I was having a lot of anxious anxiety, but I had never had anxiety before. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know what I was experiencing. I know that my ADD was getting, you know, really heightened. And again, I've always been very intelligent in school. It always came very easy for me. Mm-hmm. And so in college, when school started to get a little bit hard, and I noticed I was having these issues that my classmates were not having. I was like, what do you mean that you can study for 3 hours straight without taking a break? Wow. What do you mean that, you know, all of these things, just the executive functions. And so it was midterms or finals week. I think it was finals week. It was like the week before finals, and I couldn't sleep. Mm. I legit could not sleep. I would close my eyes and I would wake up like, oh my God, I'm late. Like, I'm late to something. And it'd be like 3 a.m. and I'm like, okay, no, I'm not late to anything. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna try to fall asleep again. But then at that point, my nervous system is so heightened and that it would take me a couple hours to fall back asleep. And I sleep, you know, 15, 20 minutes, and I would wake up. The best way I could describe it to someone is when you know that you have a test, let's say it's 8 a.m, right? Mm-hmm. The next day, and you're staying up late studying, and you put like 3 alarms because you know you're exhausted.
Yes.
And then you wake up and it's like really bright outside and you didn't hear an alarm.
Yes.
Right. And you wake up like, oh, I totally missed my test. Like, no, what time is it? Mm-hmm. It must be like 9:10. And then you're like, you look and you're like, oh wait, it's only 6 a.m. My alarm's haven't rang. Phew. So I was having that feeling, that reaction of like, oh my God, I'm really late, I'm waking up, and then realizing, okay, no, there's nothing actually wrong. Phew, calm down. For about 5 days, like Monday through Friday, and then it got to Friday, and my roommate actually told me, like, you're not okay. Like, you have not, I haven't seen you sleep. And I mean, I was a zombie. I mean, I couldn't think. I was like, I can't study. I have all of my finals are next week. So I was freaking out. I went to the doctor and I was like, you need to give me something to sleep. Like, you need to knock me out. Give me melatonin. I don't care. Like, put me to sleep because I haven't slept in 5 days. And yeah, that's kind of what did it. I started seeing a psychiatrist and then a therapist. And I had seen a therapist before, like in high school, which actually is what motivated me to go get my psychology degree. I loved the whole concept of it and the way it supported me and really... Mm-hmm. Figuring out what I wanted to do and, you know, organizing my brain. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to go to therapy. There's got to be something wrong, right? And so then, yeah, they were like, oh, you have anxiety. And I was like, what is that? Yeah.
Define it.
What do you mean I have anxiety? Like, what do you mean?
This is how life works.
This is normal. Like, yeah, I'm anxious. Of course I'm anxious. I'm nervous. I have tests. Mm-hmm. You know, I have my exams coming up. I have things going on in my life. But yeah, that's when I realized like, oh, this can be a disorder. Like, your nervous system can get so dysregulated that anxiety is your default mm-hmm. mode. Like, you're just in fight, like a flight mode,
yes.
Not even fight or flight. Like, you're in the flight, like you're mm-hmm. running away. Everything scares you. And that's how I felt. I dropped out of that quarter.
Oh, no.
And I felt like running away. Obviously I stayed and, you know, it took me a couple weeks to kind of regulate myself, but I've always been an athlete all my life. And I was like, how can I be nervous, anxious? Like, I don't understand. I started taking my upper division courses and studying the brain.
Okay.
Right? And how chemicals and drugs work on the brain and the way your brain and your body works, that mind-body connection.
Absolutely.
And I was fascinated. I think I was hooked from there. I was like, I am studying anxiety and the nervous system.
That's a good addiction right there.
Yeah.
Addicted to studying.
Definitely. And then I came out of college and I started working with people with disabilities. And I think I just had a natural knack to it because I always came from this empathetic place of, I might not understand what's going on internally in your mind, but I didn't even understand my own internal environment for a long time. Like, I needed support to understand myself. So, you know, how can I not be empathetic to somebody else needing support to function, you know, and understand themselves as well? Yeah, so that's why when I heard that, you know, you, again, I don't know what your podcast is about, but I know that, you know, my friend was just like, oh yeah, he, you know, he likes talking about weight loss and the human body. And I was like, I love the human body.
Yeah, this is, all three of those things. It's mind, body, and soul. That's what the podcast is about.
Love it.
And so, some days it's really heavy on the fitness aspect. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's heavy on the spiritual aspect. Sometimes it's heavy on the emotional aspect. And this I knew was going to be good when you were like, oh, I learned some things and overcame this obstacle. Here's anxiety. This is what I was dealing with. Oh, here are the techniques I learned to be full functioning and a holistic person. Like, not just, okay, I'm ready to be an athlete. When's the tryout? When's the game? When's the test? Let's do this. Because you got to turn that off sometimes.
Yeah. Right. And I mean, to be even a great athlete, you do need to have your mind, body, and soul.
And soul. Absolutely.
Grounded.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, and that's where I went to. You know, the first thing was that psychology, the let me get my mind right, mm-hmm. you know. And then after that, it was, okay, my body, let me work on my body, mm-hmm. right? Sleeping correctly, the nutrition that I put into my body, vital. The type of movement, you know, that not only feels good to me, but that helped me progress and get better and get more in touch with, you know, being able to connect to those muscles and just have more functional movement. And then even the spirituality is what helped me with connecting with my breath and mm-hmm. get into a meditative state and be able to regulate, you know, my mind and my heart from a different space, you know, where it wasn't always logical, but it was feeling and it was being in touch and being able to sit alone by myself. I mean, I thought that would be the easiest thing in the world. I was like, cool. Like, sometimes I hate people. I want to be alone in my room, you know, but it's one thing to be alone. And then it's another thing to sit with yourself.
Yes. That as I get older, that's more of how I prefer things. So I'm going to be myself for a second. I want to just run through some scenarios in my mind, even if they're not real situations, just to, with my attitude and my temperament right now, how would I handle those situations? Mm. Oh, I want to go back to some of these memories, some of these ones that I pushed to the side. All right. Actually, I don't want to talk about that one. Oh, yeah, let's go through this, walk through it. And one of the areas of healing was bringing Jesus into it. So like those, I call it the vault, right? All the bad stuff, like I'm gonna shut the door, lock it. And I purposely did not have a code on this. It is a code, but you can't open it. You're not gonna guess. It's gonna stay shut, right? The only time it opens is to throw another bad memory in there, a breakup or a family situation, whatever it is. But then a couple of years ago, it was okay, I'm friends with Jesus now. All right. Where were you in this particular situation? And it almost becomes like Russian roulette, like in the gun, not the right, not on the table, right? You're like, all right, this has the potential to go sideways real fast. That's why I put it in the vault. But if I'm here with Jesus, oh, you tell me where you were in that particular situation. And that's been something that I know that I'm healed when I can talk about whatever the situation it was and not start crying or be like, you know what? I want to be alone for a really long time and not talk to anyone. So, yeah, I relate to your story in college. College is such a trip, right? Because it's like, it's not just serious academics now. Like, oh, if you thought high school is hard, wait till no. Wait till you get to college. But then it's a new scenario, maybe a new city, new town, your friend group is not there. And maybe you did have a friend from high school who's at that college. All of a sudden they disappear. You're like, wait.
That's funny.
What happened? I thought we were, you wrote in my yearbook.
Yeah, that kind of is what happened. Like around that time. Yeah. That's funny.
I knew I shouldn't have been heartfelt. I should have just said hags. Have a great summer. Never see you again. Right.
No. Yeah.
But the being in that new environment and then saying, how am I going to navigate this with the time that I have for studies and setting up and living life 1 year at a time for those 4 years? I mean, I went to a 5-year school, but you get the point. And so that is such a crucial time for development. But then if you have some bad habits, that actually might be the death of you. College, right?
I mean, I saw so many friends drop out, mm-hmm. not be able to make it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had a friend that had a Bill Gates scholarship, which was full tuition paid for all the way through his doctorate program.
Whoa.
And he dropped out like the second year of his bachelor's program.
Dang.
I was like, you went to 2 years of college having your entire career paid for. And because you were lazy and you decided to spend your money on drugs and food, like you just dropped out and you didn't study. I'm like, oh.
That is a pitfall.
That
is a real pitfall.
I couldn't believe that happened. And he was Hispanic, so it like almost stung me even more because I went to a predominantly white college. I mean, it was culture shock for me. I was like, I had never seen this many white people in one place together. And it was really cool. I made a lot of great friends. But, you know, you find your niches in small communities. And so to me, it was like, oh, my God, like it was one of my people that like had made it and then just let himself drop the ball. You know, but college can be really demanding.
Absolutely.
There's so much, like you said, there's so much difference that you go. I mean, you're a 17, 18 year old kid that's fully dependent on your family to go completely independent in this place that has thousands of options and it's hard, like if you don't have some type of support or grounding and people to keep you accountable. You know, your friends really do make a really big difference, especially
it's vital. That might be what either makes or breaks college career, and that right there is something that you don't really see in the movies. It's like, oh, this is a time for freedom and doing whatever you want without parental guidance or presence, no presence. And sure, there are those party movies like that, but then the reality is if you're not used to silence and then you're alone for a little bit, you're like, oh, now I'm uncomfortable.
All right.
So put studies aside, academia aside, if you are with a bunch of other people who are in your age group and especially culture shock, oh man, it's gonna be terrifying.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely terrifying.
I mean, you go to bad habits so easily because it's the easiest way to connect. I mean, even now, like you think about anybody in their adult life, in my early 30s, you know, if I wanted to socialize, the easiest thing to do is to go to a bar.
All right, let's grab a drink.
Let's go get a drink. Oh, yeah. Hey. No, catch
first
up.
On me. Yeah.
Haven't seen you in a while. Let's go get some drinks. Mm-hmm. You know, and you tell someone I don't drink or I don't want to drink, it's like, so then what do you want to do?
Go for a walk?
What do you mean? Yeah, it's like, what do you mean? You want to grab coffee and walk around? Like, who does that?
Well, truth be told, my man's Will, he actually inspired me to quit drinking.
Oh.
Like, he's a social person.
Yeah.
And I never told him this, so this is the first time he's going to hear this. I don't know how it came up. He's like, oh, yeah, I don't drink. I'm like, huh.
Right? Like, well,
what's gonna be the excuse for us hanging out? Well, I guess I'll just see you here, right? But it's not that serious, but it was a moment where I'm like, okay, well, how do I get to the next level in terms of what my goals are for fitness? And the thing that had been looming since I was 19 years old was cut out alcohol.
You'll
be just fine.
Yeah.
And so that was one of those things I put in the vault. I'm gonna find another. I'm gonna work out twice as hard.
Yeah.
Like, how about that?
I'll do anything and everything but that.
Anything but that.
Even in fitness spaces, I mean, I used to run a gym, and everybody after the gym, you go grab beer.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a part of it, especially in like high-end, high-intensity sport.
Yes.
Anything that requires you to like expend a lot of energy. I mean, beer is the quickest form of carbs and energy that you can consume. So it's like, okay, you're drained. Let's go get some beer.
That's the more hydration in a beer after a hard workout than in water. So it's the perfect excuse because you also get a little alcohol. Yeah.
Yeah.
But then that process, I don't know. I think it's been about 6 weeks now of not having alcohol.
How do you feel?
My sleep is so deep. When I wake up in the morning, so normally it's, you know, I got, imagine you're a pilot, a Boeing 747. You know how you're flipping all the switches, turning all that up? That's me in the morning. Like, I got to go through each of those checks. Like, okay, hold on. We need to fuel up too. Okay. Let's go through all of those things. And now when I wake up, I'm like, okay, it's shifted. I don't say it's perfect, but it's, I'm more firing on all pistons, but then I'm like, okay, how can I adjust my attitude right now, right in this moment, right now? Mm-hmm. And that was the thing that had been the struggle when I was going to the gym really early in the morning. But then, you know, fight or flight kicks in when you're motivated, and I would go from white zone to orange when my alarm went off in the morning. And that's how I was able to, I would just spike like adrenaline and go to the gym.
Like an angry waker.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's funny. I used to be like that. I still am like that, actually. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to say I used to be like that. I'm definitely like that when I take like naps. And for a long time, I mean, everybody knew, like, if Liz is asleep, and don't wake her up. Like, you don't want to be on the other end of that stare. Like, my ex-boyfriend used to tell me the same thing. I'm a widow, by the way, so I'll call him my ex-boyfriend.
Rest in peace.
Thank you. So he used to tell me, he was like, I will do anything but wake you up.
Nice.
And it would be in a nap, sleeping over, like, and sometimes I would get mad. Like, I'm telling you, I'm giving you permission to wake me up. And he's like, you can give me the full green light to wake you up. He's like, if you don't wake up with your alarm, he's like, I'm sorry, honey, you can be late, but I won't. Yes. He's like, I won't wake you up. I mean, it was one of those things that no matter who, no matter when, if I woke up for the first 5 minutes, I was going to be like so pissed off. Yes. I mean, angry, like you said, like in that orange red zone for absolutely no reason. Yep. And I was even conscious of it. I can tell you, like, okay, thanks for waking me up. Like, no, don't talk to me until I talk to you again.
Yes.
Like, I'm just really pissed off at you. But I didn't do it. But you asked me to. I'm like, I know that I asked you to, and I probably won't be mad in 15 minutes. But right now, like, I could chew your head off. Like, don't ask me why. And I'd go in the restroom and, you know, they just get all these bad words out and this energy out. And I mean, I used to wake up and go work out at 5 a.m., 6 a.m., and it worked.
It worked for that.
It worked. And I never realized that that's not okay. Like, that means your nervous system isn't regulated.
Yes.
Like, that's not a normal way to wake up really pissed off and have to go expel that energy in a workout because you're so pissed.
Yes. And a couple episodes back, I had one of my heroes, Alexandria Vasquez, on the show, and she doesn't do it that way. And I'm like, oh, I'm glad you found a way that works for you and you're consistent with going to the gym and working on bodybuilding. But I don't think you understand, in my world, if I don't feel like I'm about to step onto the rugby field and there's gonna be kickoff, I'm not gonna go. I'll find an excuse. Oh, hey, look at this.
Like, I can't work out happy. Well,
No. Oh, that'd be later in the day. Maybe. But no.
In the morning, it's not gonna be like,
no.
How are you doing?
No. For her, what did she say? It was her style of motivating herself was very affirming and full of goodness. And it is very effective, but that seemed alien to me, because if my alarm clock's going off at 4 a.m. to be at the gym at 5, or 4:30 a.m. to be at the gym at 6, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it took a lot.
What's that internal conversation sound like? Like, what do you?
So she had asked me that too, and I was like, I don't know if you want to hear this. all right, it's you're coming with me or you're not. And I imagine a knife at my throat, like my version looking at me and say, hey, we're going to the gym. So you decide now. And that immediately put me fight
to
fight.
Like your, let's do this. Your more fit version of yourself, like you would say, like the better version of yourself kind of calling to you and saying, like, get up, like this is where you need to go.
So that would be the first week. And then I'd actually be able to beat my alarm clock because I'd be like, oh, I know my alarm clock's about to go off and we're going to the gym. I'm ready, the best version of myself for being able to have this consistency for the 6 to 8 weeks. So I'd be fine. Yeah. So I'm like, hey, it worked. But in the long term, it did not help for making friends.
Right.
And at the gym, I'm not there to make friends. Right. So
I was like that too for a long time. But I actually like working out in group settings. I think because it changes my mindset.
Yes.
You know, because if I go in the gym by myself, I am there in fight mode. Like you said, like I am like I'm stepping on a rugby field. Like I'm about to, you know, and that's to me, that's how I work out best. Mm-hmm. And even to this day, like it, there's something about the way that you could call on your muscles, because if you think about when you're angry, the part of your nervous system that lives on is in your fight mode.
Yes.
Right. So that's all sympathetic nervous system, fight mode. You're seeing red. Your body can't put the energy into your like digestive system and your organs and also in your muscles. Absolutely. Right. Like you can't think and fight, like you're just fighting with all your might. So the best way to get all of your energy into your muscles so that you can lift and push and pull as hard as you can is to go into fight mode.
Yes.
But, you know, it's not that it's bad to go into fight mode, is that knowing how to get yourself there and how to bring yourself back.
Bring yourself back. That's
so that you being in control of your fight mode.
That is key.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to have to talk about that part. How do you bring yourself back? So that decompression part is, that's the point where I would talk to Jesus and be like, I'm really thankful for LA Fitness, or really thankful for Gold's Gym. I'm really thankful for beating my alarm clock so many times, for putting in this workout, and just go through a bunch of those. And then, oh, I'm thankful for comedy. I'm thankful for this hilarious viral video from 2013 that I still think is funny. Right? You know what? Let's watch it right now. Oh, look at this. Bad lip reading Yoda talking about seagulls.
You know, I love that you said gratitude, and gratitude is what puts you back into the, I mean, the frequency of gratitude is in your parasympathetic nervous system.
Oh, hey, look at that.
Yeah.
Well, because I noticed if I don't, I'm hypercritical, right? I'm like, oh, look at this dude, clearly on steroids. Oh, I can't believe she'd wear that. Oh, are you kidding me? What? You call that functional? Right. So that'd be, if I don't bring God into it immediately, become hypercritical, and then even less friendly, almost to the point of wanting to provoke someone, right? So yeah, there's a ton of things that you could have a field day as a psychiatrist.
Like, tell me more.
Tell you what. All right. Oh, where do I start? All right. So this person didn't wipe down the machine, and they were sweating like nobody's business, and just had the gall to just leave with the imprint of their body on there. Like, that's weird.
Then you're the type of person to get up and go tell them?
No.
Oh, okay.
So when I get in that mode, I'm like, that's the good stuff. I'll take it. I'm gonna add to it. This is that's the sign of victory. All the winners, leave that sweat, right? But then it's weird because it's a switch. Because then if I'm not sweaty, and like if I'm not taking creatine, I'm not gonna sweat as much. Like when I didn't experiment with creatine, it was a pool of sweat everywhere. But there were times where people would ask me to wipe the machine because I used it and walked away, and I'd be like, you don't know how close. I mentally, I'd be like, you don't know how close I am to punching the throat right now.
Wow.
Because I didn't sweat on the machine. It's just I'm a stranger to you. So I don't need to wipe it down. This is gym etiquette. And then, hold on. Remember, you're not just talking to yourself now mentally. You're conversing with a real live person who has feelings and things, and they don't know any of my business. Mm-hmm. So no need to go to DEFCON 4 on this person. And I found a great technique to get out of it.
Ooh, tell me.
I'd say, I'll wipe it down for you if you ask me again in a Daffy Duck impressionation. Yeah, and 9 times out of 10, the person doesn't do it, and then they kind of give me this weird look, and then I walk away, and it's fine.
That's funny.
Yeah, or I haven't done this in a long time, but if someone asks me and then they don't bite with, oh, I'll do it in a Tasmanian devil voice, right? I'll do it in a Mickey Mouse impersonation. I'll just take my shirt and give it a quick wax on, wax off, and then walk away.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting.
I think you might understand why I don't have many friends at the gym.
You're one of those look but don't touch. Like, don't get close.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So I've adjusted, I'd say, in the last couple of years to be friendly and casual with people, but not getting this long stop and chat. Because that's actually the worst part for me, is when you get caught with a chatty Cathy. Who could be a guy at the gym? You're like, whoa, yo, I'm here for 60 minutes. I can't just.
No one appreciates someone. I mean, even if I'm really happy, I could be as happy to see you. Mm-hmm. It's like, talk to me after my workout.
Or let's join. Let's work out together. Yes. And we can have this conversation. But in between time, don't do that. So it's a little bit of a tight rope. With the self-awareness that I have, it's like, okay, be friendly enough and not have the inner David Goggins going off constantly. But then don't be like, oh, hey, so tell me more. So what do you do when you're not at the gym? No, that's not. Right. That's not.
Yeah, no. It's like quick small talk. Talk to you soon. Yeah. Bye.
Bye. Boom, boom, boom. Yeah. Right.
That's funny. Yeah, I'm definitely not a chatty Cathy during the sets, like while I'm working out. But I just grew up in such a gym, in a gym environment, working out with fit people always around. So yeah, something about working out is such a, to me, it's such a community builder.
Yes.
And it builds connections. And so something about the global gym environment is very different than when you go to other gym. Going to a global gym is definitely different. I mean, me, that I've been a personal trainer for 9 years, I worked out my entire life, I go to a global gym, especially one I've never been to, I am so scared. Like, it is this nerve, like I can feel my anxiety bubbling up, like this nervousness of even people like looking at me, or going to a machine that for some reason I don't know how to use, which I mean, I think I know how to use every machine at this point, and I can coach people how to use machines, but I go into a gym and I'm like, oh my God, people are so critical. But you don't get that at a lot of like CrossFit or even like Pilates places, like almost any other type of gym workout environment. You don't get that hyper criticism vibe in the air than you do at a global gym. And I still don't understand where that comes from.
So my lady, she goes to, I shouldn't say the name. I'll say the name. She goes, well, no, I won't say the name. So goes to a gym that Marky Mark might be affiliated with. I'll just leave it at that. So if you don't know it, I'm not going to say it.
Okay.
But it's a group fitness thing, and has made like half of her friends are from the gym. I'm like, oh, that's so cool. And so actually recently we went to Vegas with some of her gym friends for their birthday. And I was like, whoa. And they're normal people.
Right.
I don't know anyone at the gym that I go to that I'd want to hang out with outside of that environment.
Right.
Like, you'd have to, like, if I see them at the bar or wherever the place is, I'll say hi. And that has happened. I'll walk down the street in Glendale and I'll see a dude from the gym. Hi. LA Fitness. Oh, yeah. Dang, I just said it.
It's like it.
Hey.
24. 24. LA. Crunch.
Hey, what's the one? There's this gym. What's it called? Oh, man. It's in North Hollywood. I'm blanking on it.
Is it a bougie gym or?
No. Oh,
Fitness 19.
Opposite. No, imagine in between all that.
Oh, okay.
It's a cheaper gym. It's open late. Speakeasy.
I have seen Speakeasy. Yeah. This one.
So you have such an eclectic crowd in there. It is awesome. It is. So that's where I have to control my face, not to start smiling from just
being humor
and laughter. Yeah. So you have one side, very hype personal trainers who are fitness influencers actually on Instagram and on YouTube. Like, oh, that's cool. Then you have someone who's like a boxing coach who's been with Floyd Moneymaker Mayweather. You're like, oh, dang. Then you have one of his clients who's actually a really good boxer. Then you have a grandma who's also next, who's getting personal trained to be a boxer, but it's just to keep heart rate up, cardio going. It's like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Then you have wherever gym you go, there's gonna be like the group, the pack of teenagers.
Oh, right? Yes.
Where don't have the gym etiquette, right? But specifically at that gym, these kids were huge, right? I'm like, I don't know if they were playing football or what, but like they're maxing out, but they actually have some really impressive weight that they're doing.
Okay.
But they're not having the right etiquette to stay away from injury. So someone's, oh yeah, I'll spot you, but then they're like, watch those two struggle. I'm like, you could die.
Yeah.
You're 175 trying to do 315. Dude, you better
spot them.
And then the half struggle, they lift it up. Right. Like, so I think in that situation, it's the opposite of white zone, yellow zone, orange zone, red zone in terms of being cautious. It's more like, all right, you're here for a reason. You're not here to people watch, but you can't help but people watch because there's all these characters.
It's entertaining.
All these characters here. All right, don't just laugh at this person. Like, there's no reason to do that. But then when you see some stuff, you're like, yo, all right. Do you ever see that the video where there's this guy running on the treadmill and this really athletic, fit, attractive woman starts jogging next to him on another treadmill? Mm-hmm. And so he like speeds up. He's really trying to show how in shape he is.
Right.
Then he trips and he falls out. He face plants, smacks so hard.
Ooh.
He hits the ground. She looks back and he starts doing push-ups like he meant to do that. yeah, it's good. It's golden. So that type of stuff would happen there.
Oh wow!
And I'm like, all right, it's not me just being critical. This is going. This has to go like, in no script.
Yeah,
I have to make a movie about this, right?
So yeah, sometimes people's critical thinking like has me really questioning. Like, what are we doing?
What are we doing?
What are we doing? So I'm like, you really thought that was a good idea? Okay. Yeah.
About to find out.
Yeah.
That's
funny. Yeah. Yeah, I recently started going more to a global gym, or I spend more time at a global gym versus I spend a lot of time at like CrossFit gyms. I did a lot of strongman type of things. When I went to a global gym, I went, it was like to Powerhouse when Crunch used to be Powerhouse back in the day. It was all the good bodybuilding equipment. Grew up kind of around that type of stuff. Nice.
That wasn't that long ago.
It wasn't that long ago.
When I first moved to California, it was all Powerhouse. And I would know, this is going to sound super weird. I just hear myself saying what I'm about to say, and I already have analyzed it. It sounds weird. So I'm going to just say it. I could tell which one you went to because the color coordination.
Interesting.
Right? So it's like my dudes in Santa Ana, they'd have the pink ones and the blue ones. Oh, I could tell. That's the crew over there.
Yeah.
And then over here, it was red. There was a gold one, and there was like a black and white one. Wow, snap! You're over here.
Oh.
Right. So, yeah, that's
taking
cool. notes, mental notes only for myself. It might leak out sideways on a podcast.
That's funny. No, yeah, that's cool. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think. Is what I noticed recently is that like, oh wow, like all the work that I've done to regulate my nervous system, like it's easier to catch myself now when my nervous system is dysregulated.
Yes.
And like what to do about it. But it's taken me so many years of personal development. I mean, I've read, I've studied, I've practiced, I've actually, you know, when people say personal development, it's not just, you know, reading a book and it's like, oh, that's awesome. It's actually doing the work and like
applying it,
taking notes, evaluating, adjusting things, making adjustments based on your results, figuring out what to adjust. Like I've done that for so many years and yet still I catch myself, you know, at certain times of like, oh my God, I don't know what to do. Like, I didn't even know that I was going to react that way. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, like going into a global gym, like, what? Why am I anxious? Like, mm-hmm. why am I nervous? Like, what mm-hmm. am I scared of? Mm-hmm. Or catching myself with that internal dialogue of like hypercriticism.
That's the
right
one.
Yeah, like you criticize yourself and it does leak out. It's, you know, something that I very recently, maybe this last year or two, that I really come to understand, like from a personal perspective, is the way that your internal world is the way you show up, and yes. it's the way that you see the world.
Yes,
like you said, it's like absolutely. If you're always out there criticizing everybody else, that is most likely the way your internal dialogue sounds. Yes. And it's like I noticed the way that I changed, you know, when I started changing how I talk to myself, is like, oh wow, like all of a sudden I have so much more empathy for mm-hmm. other people, or I can pause myself before I judge someone and you know, really care about the way that I use language and the words yes. that I say and how I show up, the energy I take, you know, I present. I have a couple of people that are very clairvoyant that mm-hmm. I work with, and they're very good at calling me out when nice. I come in, and they'll be like, hey, like we should do a meditation before mm-hmm. we get started. And I was like, really? And sometimes it's for
really,
them.
I think that's an awful decision and you're stupid. Get out of my face. Yeah, let's meditate.
Yeah, let's meditate. And I'm like, really? I'm fine. And they're like, you need to calm down. I'm like, okay. And then after I meditate, I notice, I was like, oh, wow, my breathing is so slow. Mm-hmm. I feel so calm. You know, I'm really patient. Mm-hmm. I can think so clearly. It's crazy what meditation and, you know, I thought it was really stupid when I started meditation. I was like, there's no way you're telling me I don't know how to breathe. Like, I love being alone. I'm by myself all the time for hours. Why would I need to do it with my eyes closed? But starting to meditate and sitting there with the purpose of listening to what you think about is like, oh, wow. Like, I didn't even know that those conversations came yes. into my head. I didn't even know that those thoughts came in. And at first I was like, oh my God, I can't turn off my brain. Like I can't sit and just think about nothing. Okay. And it's like, well, that's not the point. The point is not to think about nothing. The point is to recognize what you're thinking about. Yes. And then you can change what yes. you think about. It's like, if you're noticing that you're thinking about lunch and that's pissing you off, well, it's like, why are you upset that you're thinking about food? What do you think you should be thinking about? Like, you know, where is that feeling? Just all of these questions, the when, where, why, who questions start popping up. Mm-hmm. And once you start asking yourself questions and answering them for yourself, then you get those aha moments of yes. like, oh man, I opened up the vault.
Absolutely. Hey,
eventually you're going to get there whether you want to or not. It's, you know, some memory, some core memory mm-hmm. is going to come out. And you're like, oh, there it is. That's the first time that I remember feeling like this.
But that's the whole point, is to have the tools for addressing those memories.
Yeah.
So they're no longer just in a briefcase in the vault. And if it opens up and comes out,
mm-hmm.
you're able to go through it. And I like what you said about the breathing. Because the moment where I breathe in, you know, do the sign of the cross, and say a three Hail Marys, right? I'm like, was I holding my breath? What? Wait, how long had I been holding my breath for? Did I forget how to breathe?
Yeah.
Well, that's weird. That's a weird thing. All right. Okay. Let me, Lord Jesus, is this something you want to talk about? What do you want to talk about with me? Oh, wow. Man, I think I might regret about having asked that question. Why are you bringing up this person?
Yeah.
My roommate was a jerk. Da, da, da. Oh, that's what you want to talk about. That roommate. All right.
Yeah, I mean, for a long time when I've gone through a lot of spiritual, you know, I'm the type of person that loves asking hard questions, and I love asking myself hard questions. And I grew up, you know, Catholic, going to church, oh, nice. Choir, Bible study every week, you know, went through my own crisis of like, well, I don't believe in God the way that this church taught it to me, so maybe God isn't real, you know? And so then I went through my little atheist phase. It lasted like a year. I was like, I don't believe in God. But that never felt right with my soul either. You know, that I was like, no, it's not that I don't believe in God or I don't believe in Jesus. I just didn't want to practice it the way I was. Very much the type of kid that didn't like to be told what to do. So, you know, you put me in an institution that's telling me how to talk to God and how to pray. I was like, no, that's not how I do things. So I went to college and I took, one of the first things I did was I took a lot of religious studies courses because I wanted to know why I believed and what I believed in. You know, it's like, I can respect someone's decision or viewpoint or values, even if they're 100% opposite of mine, as long as I can understand them, as long as I can understand why that makes sense to you, totally accept it. I can understand, I might not have that thought process, but as long as it makes sense and it's not just because someone told you, so then that's why you have that, you know, belief, then cool. Like you have a reason, you understand where your belief comes from. That's all I care about. And so that's how it was about God for a long time, is as long as I understand why I believe in Jesus and I'm comfortable, you know, going to different types of churches or, you know, reading the Bible or books. I've read a bunch of books and different versions of the Bibles and prayed different ways. And I got rebaptized Christian. And my mom was a Buddhist for a while and was into Judaism. And so and I worked around a lot of Jews. So I think religion is fascinating. Our Jewish
brothers and sisters right there.
Yeah. Like Shalom. The way that people connect to the higher power. You know, I can understand, like, there's so many different types of people. Like, I can't expect everybody to connect the same way or to understand the way I connect with God and Jesus and when I pray. But, yeah, prayer was something that was really helpful when I started meditating, because whether I wanted to admit it or not, it brought me closer to God, because it brings you closer to yourself, you know, and your essence. And you start to realize that I don't have to do this, you know, list of requirements that the society puts on me in order for me to be, you know, a good person. Like, I don't have to do all of these things. I don't have to have all of these things, like a house and a family and a car and money and a career, in order for me to be a good person. Like, I am a good person. And because I'm a good person, then you know, that I'm made good, I'm perfect. And that's why I will have and be and do all of these things. But it took me a long time to get back to that, you know, to that circle. And yeah, like, that's something that helped me with my nervous system and be able to, for sure. You know, and it's funny, people are like, what are you? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm a child of God. I know.
That's my favorite one, child of God.
You know, and I'm like, I will go to a Christian church, I'll go to a Catholic church, you know, like, I'll go to different places, because I can respect that, you know, when you put people together with a common goal, you get places faster and you get farther. And so whether that's spiritually, that's at the gym, you know, if you work out with by yourself, you're going to get amazing results. But if you have even just one accountability partner, one person that goes with you, you're going to get better results a lot faster.
Absolutely.
If you pray and you connect with God, that's amazing. And you have one other brother or sister in God or somebody else that prays with you, you go to someone else's church, you're going to strengthen your relationship.
Absolutely. Yes. And this is going to sound like a tangent from what you're talking about, but it's not. It comes back to it. Have you ever done the Bible in a year? Oh, have a drink.
Oh my God.
Okay.
Sorry, it's the AC.
Uh-oh. We're at the...
I'm ready.
All right. Okay. Is your okay? Cool. All right.
So, have I done the Bible in a year?
Bible in a year.
I did Bible study. I think it was about a year. Yeah, we read it in tandem with I think the book's called The Crown, but I can't remember. But
about the horses?
No. So it essentially is all it's the Bible, but it's all written in like story format.
Oh, cool.
So it goes through all the stories, but then it tells you like, oh, okay, this is summarizing, you know, this passage through this passage. It gives it to you in order.
Oh, wow. That's intense.
In chronological order.
Oh, I like that.
And so you're reading it and you're going through the Bible and reading, you know, you read the story version and the Bible version and you kind of put them together.
That's awesome.
And then we'd, you know, had a whole study group. So then we'd talk about, you know, what that story was, the time, a period that it, you know, that they're talking about, how it relates to you now. The thing I love about the Bible is because you can read it literally or metaphorically.
Or both.
Or both. Yeah. Or back and forth,
back
right?
And forth. Yeah, yeah.
You go from literal to metaphor. And I'm a big metaphor type of person. So I love reading the Bible metaphorically. And every time that you read it, it's like watching the same movie over and over and over again for the rest of your life. Every time you watch it, you're
big
in
shout
a
out,
different...
Will. We got to watch it multiple times.
Multiple times. At different ages and stages.
Yeah.
You might have hated it when you were 10, but you love it when you're 25.
Yeah.
I mean, you never know, you know?
You never know.
Or you might love it even more. Yeah, so it's like you could hear the same story, and depending on what you're going through at the time,
absolutely,
you're
going to
hear a completely different lesson.
Oh, man.
Different point of view. You might interpreted in a way that you've never interpreted before. And this is what I like about going to church and listening to pastors and people, you know, give their version of the Bible and the stories, is because I'm always like, huh, I never would have interpreted it that way, or I didn't even see that, you know. And you learn, and then you apply whatever, you know, kind of fits with you, and then you let go of the rest.
Yeah, let go of what doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I really dig about reading the scriptures is why that particular story is in there. Because some of them are showing the strengths of a person, right? Then another time, it's showing a really bad example and being like, well, why would you show this version? Like, my man Samson, he's not doing what he needs to be doing pretty much the entire time, right? And so the example of like everything that he goes through,
like this is what not to do.
This is what not to do. Don't do any of that stuff, right? this is not how you treat your parents. This is not how you treat your faith. This is not how you treat your wife. This is not how you treat your friends. This is not how you treat your second wife. Prostitutes. This is not how you, like, it's like, whoa, wait. Yeah. So as a kid, I was immediately gravitated to Samson's, like, oh, I want to be big and strong too. And look, oh, he's out foxing the Philistines again. Ha ha. Right. Then reading the adult version, right, and pick up any Bible and read it, you're like, whoa, wait a second. There's so much in between the lines in that character study. And then the conclusion is, don't do anything this dude did. It's like, whoa. Is there anyone else like that?
Right.
And,
I mean, you think of all the good movies, you have your protagonist and antagonist, and then you have your bad guys that you like end up loving and feeling bad for.
Killmonger.
Right.
Black Panther. That's what.
Yeah.
Yes.
That you're like, oh my God, like, I just want to save them. Right. Like, you know, oh, I could totally understand.
Totally. That's, you know? That's the empathy,
that's
right there.
The empathy. Yeah. I understand where they're coming from. And, you know, you wouldn't have a good story without all of that, you know, some of the best. I mean, this is why the Joker is so popular.
Oh yeah.
Right? It's like he's like the worst villain ever, but the most loved because everyone feels sorry for him because they understand where his story came from. And I feel like that's, to me, it's like that's why, like, you can't have a Bible full of just all the good stuff.
Yes.
And that wouldn't represent humankind.
Of course. But
you know?
That's the thing. Like, I don't know where I had that idea where it'd only be showing good examples.
Good examples,
and then,
yeah.
The first time I read the Bible as an adult, I was a teenager, like 19, 20 years old. So, wait a second. Whoa, these are... All right. This is Game of Thrones, the original version. Like, so much bad stuff.
Right.
So much abuse. So much incest.
This isn't
so
the
much
Disney
murder.
Version.
Yeah, this is not the Disney version at all. Like, what are you talking about? Right. And so just looking at that, I was like, whoa. And just back to our original conversation about awesome female lead like Princess Leia. So in the Book of Judges, like the only judges that did a good job, like almost got A pluses, were the women, like Deborah, Jael, all that. Like they did what they're supposed to be doing. They did it the way they're supposed to be. The God asked them to, and they were awesome leaders. Like whoa, all right. The cure to toxic masculinity is ordered masculinity, right? Like be a dude, but just understand there's areas where you need to scale back, right? Or actually the thing you are saying is not a good look. Why would you even say that to begin with, right? And so not to throw the baby out with the bathwater and just be like, oh, all masculinity is toxic. That's not true. There's some bad habits that we've done, right? And then there's also corrective behaviors that you can do that are not so different than learning how to self-regulate, having self-awareness, starting to work on your breathing so you don't go into fight or flight. Well, what happens when you're there? That's how you de-escalate. Right. Oh, all of a sudden that makes an oriented person who has friends.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? It's like, and that's where you get this notion of like, you know, a strong masculine man, right? That is in touch with themselves and that can exercise their masculinity from a place of love and not from a place of, you know, anger or resentment or authority or control. It's, you know, it's this, you know, masculinity is this peace bringing safety, security.
Yes.
You know, and yeah, I love that.
Going back to the Bible in a year, that's the challenge that I'd give to anyone who's looking for God or wanting to go deeper in their faith, is to read the Bible with a critical lens, but not like skepticism, you know? So be like, oh, no matter what path you're on for walking with Jesus, it's do the Bible in a year and ask all the questions that come to mind without fear of rejection or someone being like, oh, that's dumb, or just shutting it down. And if there's a question that you have in any section, because I mean, once you go through Genesis, the average person will have 100 questions saying, hold on a second, what? This is why Muslims believe what they believe, and this is where it came from. This is where our Jewish brothers and sisters believe what they believe, and this is where it came from. This is where our Catholic Christian brothers and sisters came from. This is why they're doing certain things, right? But then have I call it the mystery box, because there's going to be some questions that aren't going to get answered now in this life. Even if you read the Bible once a year, every year, to your 103, you're still going to have questions, right? And that's the one to take to Jesus about. And if there's not a response, okay, but you still keep walking. Just keep moving forward.
I love talking about religion, Bibles, and stuff like that. And, you know, I'm such a science person, so I looked for a lot of answers to my questions in science.
Okay.
And for a long time, I didn't find them until I did. Until awesome. I realized that, as crazy as it is, it's like science is catching up to religion, because religion comes from a basis and a foundation of spirituality, of individual connectedness with God, right? And with the universe, whatever. You know, all sorts of frequencies. We're all energy. We're all frequency, right? We all understand that and know that. But the way that we've been able to explain it scientifically versus spiritually and just knowing is so crazy. And I love that, like, the more that we ask those questions in ways that, you know, some people want to understand them, it's like, yeah, like, you can find those answers. If you connect with God in a way that feels very scientific, you know, and you want to go through the energies and the math and the physics and the theoretical physics of it, you can find it that way. But if you want to go through the feeling your emotions and you know, the way you feel in a church and the conversations you have and prayer, you can go through that way too. You know, like, there's so many different ways to, like, the point is that you get there. You know, the point is that you get to a place where you feel connected to the highest power, because that's what is going to help you feel grounded. And the more grounded you are, the more grounded you are physically in your body, like spiritually, mentally, in the way that you show up for yourself, especially first before anybody else. And, you know, and then that motivates you to start working on your body, working on, you know, the way you talk to people, you communicate, the way you learn about people, and just everything, you know, everything connects to everything.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. And you hit it, hit the nail on the head too, about seeing the correlation between science and religion, because that's the purpose of the Bible is actually not to prove that, but it's all there, right?
Yeah.
So why, let me chip you out. Let's watch this. What are you sitting on?
I'm sitting on a couch.
What's the couch made of?
Atoms, materials. We can go
out. What are atoms made out of?
Protons, neutrons, and electrons. Oh, I remember.
Yeah, you got it. You get an A+ in chemistry and orgo too.
Right. Right.
So, what is an electron made out of?
Mm-hmm. Energy, matter. Matter and antimatter, right? It's all made out of
matter. Oh, man. All right. Yes. You're right. There's quarks, right?
Mm.
That are made of, and you have things that are smaller than that that make those up, right? Gluons, mesons, right?
Yes.
All these things. And then even inside of that, it's made up of other things.
The ether, right? Is that where you get to ether?
Oh, no. Watch this. Watch this. It actually goes down to the subatomic level, and at its purest essence, it's light. It's like pure light.
Yes, like pure energy. Light. Yeah, pure light.
Yeah,
yes.
Pure light. And so the second anyone starts to mention frequency, oh yeah. Right? Like, oh yeah, because it'll be a light, a form of light.
Yeah.
And Jesus talks about if your eye is bad, right? Oh, well, your eye is the lamp of the body, right? And so if your eye is bad, he's very specific word. He says, the dark light in you, how dark will that be, right? You're like, wait, did my man JC just talk about antimatter, dark matter,
right?
Dark light, well, there's a type of
and
dark
the
light.
Knowing yes. of that at a yes. time where there was yes. no science
didn't,
to back it up
it.
I mean, so many so many people that, you know, have all of these knowing and this knowledge that it doesn't come from science, but then you add science and it just proves what it was already there.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about like, oh, you know, and let there be light.
The first line.
Everything
all right.
is so all about light.
So imagine, so I trip out because I'm a storyteller, right? You need a beginning, a middle, and an end, right? And in my personal opinion, there should always be redemption in the story. Not just, don't teach a lesson to say a lesson. Like, oh, there needs to be redemption in it, right? So I'm convinced the true story, right, of Jesus rising from the dead, right? Oh, there it is. Like, gruesome death, but he came back. That's Easter Sunday, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the going back to storytelling, to grab the audience with the first couple lines, right? And then conclude it last couple lines. It needs to be closest thing to flawless possible, right? So to have those opening lines in the beginning, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Right. And then he spoke it into being, right? Time space. Like, wait a second. Hold on. You mean to tell me in the Bible that has the perfect start in Genesis and the perfect end in Revelation? All right, we couldn't have just made this. Like, it had to have been divinely inspired.
Mm-hmm.
Because to speak light into being, that defines time, matter, and space, right? And it's constantly expanding.
Yeah.
Wait a second. All right, hold on.
And then now we talk, about scientifically, right?
Yes.
Universe is always expanding. There's so many galaxies and universes and da-da-da. And it's like, if it's so much vaster than we imagined, like, how is it a stretch that happened this way? And not just that, it's like, how did someone write this down like 500 years ago and we're now also proving it right with science?
Mm-hmm.
There's just so much about it that like you said, there's so many questions that won't get answered. But that's not what it's about. The point is not to answer all those questions. And the point isn't even for the Bible to be right or wrong. The point is the journey that you go through when you read the Bible, the journey that you go through when you go through meditation, when you connect. It's not about how buff you get. It's about the journey of going.
Speak for yourself. Yeah, that's not. Don't.
Right,
yeah. I mean, my name is Dave Woods. I think it is about as buff as you can get.
Okay. It definitely plays a role, but it's not like you get to a certain point and then you're gonna stop going to the gym.
No.
You're like forever, I get to this buffness, and now I'm done.
That's actually where I've messed up every single time in my fitness journey. It's like, you know what? I am here.
I'm good. Yeah. We'll stop. Good. I can stop.
Yeah, I'm not going to the gym. Getting the dad bod back. No.
Right. Yeah. And so it's like, that's what it's about. It's not about just reading the Bible once and you're done with it. It's like, however you connect to yourself, to your higher power, like, keep searching for new ways and new opportunities. And, you know, it's that journey of going through it and discovering, like, oh my God, like, I saw it this way and now I see it this other way, and look at how much I've grown.
Yes.
And you get so much confidence in that, and being able to reflect and see your journey. It's like, man, the first time I picked up a Bible, like the first time I went to church and I was singing these songs, and I was like, what are we doing? And then now I go and it's this appreciation for, you know, the way I see it is like, oh my God, all of these voices in unison at the same frequency, connecting to God. Like, harmonious. How could you not think that that's power? Yeah. Like, you know, but I see it so differently now than I did back then. And it's like that constant journey of like getting a little bit better in all these areas. Mm. And then hanging out with the right people that keep pushing you to be better and to, you know, keep exercising those healthy habits.
And that also trips me out. So what you just got to know who's the right person to hang out with, right? I think starting when I was 19, that was not the discretion that I had. It was like, I'm going to be friends with everyone.
Oh, yeah?
I'm going to be just myself. I'm going to be authentic with all the people. I'll empathize with them for whatever it is. We'll celebrate our differences, yada, yada, yada. But then, sure, you can come into my heart. I'll go into your friends, right? And then the betrayal started happening. Like, yo, all right.
Yeah.
But the whole thing now, you know, 20 years later, practically 20 years later, is to notice the difference between a counterfeit and the real thing, right? So if I was like, hey Liz, you want $100, you want a C-note, I'm gonna give you $100, right? What would your response be?
I'd be like, for what?
For what? Oh, well, you're smart, you're full of wisdom. Why are you giving this? What are you using? No, if I was like, I just want to say thank you for being on the You Versus You podcast. This is a gift, spend it on whatever you want, and I give you $100 bill. What would you say? What would you do? By the way, now, spoiler alert, I'm not going to do that.
Dang it. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
I have to bribe people. No.
You know, now, the way my mentality is now, I wouldn't have done this maybe 2 years ago, but now I'd say thank you.
All right.
You know, I'd accept it. I'd say thank you so much. Like, I really appreciate it. You didn't have to do that, but I appreciate it. I'm not going to say no to a blessing. And that's the way I see it now. It's like someone offers me something and it's like, that's a blessing. Why would I say no to money if I didn't need it? And I was like, you know what? I generally don't need this $100, but thank you so much. Like, I'll give it to somebody that does need it.
Wow.
You know, because I'd just be a conduit to that. It's like, I'm not going to say no because one, that robs you of the gift of giving and of blessing someone. Like, it feels so good to be able to help someone out or to give or to show appreciation. Like, that's your love language. Like, you giving me $100 is going to make you feel really good. Like, you're showing your appreciation. Cool, I'll take it. Like,
you accepting it.
And I'm accepting it.
Yeah, we're both blessed.
Yeah. It's like, and it's great. And then if I use the money, I'll remember, right? Like, where it came from. And then if I give it to someone, I'll let them know where it came from. And yeah, that's what I would do. But maybe 2 years ago, I probably would have been like, no, you don't have to. Like, it's okay. Like, really, like, I don't need it, even if I did.
I insist.
Yeah.
You've been such a great guest, great conversation. No. Here, you have
to. And then I'm like, okay, thank you. Like, but I would take it and feel guilty. I'd have that energy of guilt of I shouldn't have taken it. I didn't deserve it. Like, I didn't ask for it, or, you know, do they see me as a charity case now? Right? Like, all of these.
Oh, dang. Internalized that for that bad. Wow.
All of these negative internalized, you know, fears, you know, or doubts. And, you know, of course, everything always comes back to childhood, right? But that's just something, like, I just grew up that way of always helping others and being of service that I didn't realize being of service meant, you know, from an overflowing cup, not from whatever cup is you have. Whatever. Like, if I have an empty cup, you still have to give. No, like, you can't genuinely serve from a place where you're empty, because then it doesn't come from a place of overflowing love and service. It comes from a place of you needing to feel good about yourself because you gave.
Wow.
And then that's a selfish reason. And then you're filling your own cup by trying to fill someone else's, and that doesn't ever work.
That's the truth, Bob.
Yeah, so now it's like that's where I'm at. That's where my mentality is. It's like, yeah, I'll take any blessing that comes away, and I'll feed it, you know, the energy of gratitude versus the energy of guilt, because being guilty is not going to...
That's beautiful.
You know?
I'm going to make it ugly now. What if I ended up giving you a counterfeit? I gave you a fake $100 bill.
Ooh. Right?
And you... All things considered of, oh, you'd accept it now. A couple of years ago, you'd be resistant, but then you did take it. I didn't tell you it was fake, but I just gave it to you.
I wouldn't automatically think that you gave it to me on purpose. I would assume, honestly, I'd assume that you didn't know it was counterfeit. And I would probably call you and tell you. And then if you told me, like, oh, shit, you got me. Sorry. Oh, so
let's go deep. Let's go real deep. I'm going to go. Oh, I had no idea. Honest mistake. But I did know it was a fake. I just wanted to flood the market with some counterfeit bills. Okay. I need to break these up. Here's one way I'm getting rid of it. Right? Fake altruism. Right? You find out.
You've been doing it to other people or whatever.
Oh, no, not that part.
Okay.
The second you find out. You're at the gas station, you go to fill up your tank because you just got this crispy C note.
Yeah.
And then the teller, the gas station attendant is like, what is this? It's not, get out of here. Where did you get this? I'm going to have to report you. What happens there? Like, what's that shock?
I've actually had this happen to me once with a $20 bill, but honestly, I don't know. I still, you know, it's crazy. It is like, I wouldn't automatically think that you gave me a counterfeit bill on purpose, but I'd probably apologize, be like, oh, sorry, like, no, there's no way that that's counterfeit.
I got it from a friend.
There's no way. And then, I mean, I think I would eventually, like, once I found out that you really did give me a fake counterfeit money, part of me would laugh. I'd be like, wow.
That was a messed up joke.
He didn't have to give me anything, but he chose to give me a fake $100 bill.
And he knew.
I would just be like, oh man, like, I mean, I think it would definitely change the way that I saw you in the sense that, you know, integrity means something.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and so when you, to your point of like who you choose to hang out with, like, I probably wouldn't choose to hang out with you, because to
smart
me, it's
you,
like,
yeah.
I wouldn't want to hang out with someone that very clearly doesn't have integrity,
yes.
You know, that says something and thinks something and then does something totally different,
yes.
You know, and I'd probably now, like, I'd probably have a conversation and be like, why? Like,
why?
Where did, you know, like, I would want to understand why, because that might change my mind. You know, there might be a learning lesson there. There might be, you know, there's always an opportunity that I could help you see, like, you know, why that wasn't aligned maybe with who you want to be. But if that is something, because there are people that are okay with doing that. I mean, we have cartels, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
there's people that really don't
far,
mind.
Not far, yeah.
Yeah.
You never know who you're sitting next to at lunch.
Exactly. You know, that have absolutely no remorse, you know, for, you know, lying to someone or... but to me, it's like, that's just very unnecessary. Like, it was an unnecessary... like an unnecessary evil, I guess, or it's like, you didn't have to do that, you know? So I'd be like, you know, you're choosing to do that. I just probably wouldn't hang out with you. Right. Wouldn't make it a big deal, but it would just be, you know, something about like, oh, okay, yeah. Just not someone I would hang out with or kick it with, you know?
He's a special case.
Yeah.
The reason why I bring it up is because that's actually how I treat new people and friends. And I go through those tests of saying, all right, let me check it out. Let me hold it up against the light. I don't see that line going through the scene. I think I might be dealing with a counterfeit. All right, let's hold it up to the black light. All right, what else is the reflection coming up? Oh, yeah. It's not. Oh, I don't see the silhouette. Dang, this is not good. Oh, I don't see the marker. I don't see the stamp of authenticity on this. Oh, man, let me put the pin over it, right? Oh, this came out watered. Oh, wow. And that's enough for me.
Yeah.
But just there's a couple indicators of the test of integrity. If it doesn't check out, I don't spend my time on it. Mm. Or now on them. That's the whole.
Yeah, so you become a selective when you're choosing your friends.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm. So way less betrayal.
Yeah. So it takes longer to find those quality friends, but then I'm sure you find the friends that you want and that you're looking for.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I can tell I'm dealing with quality. Will dealing with quality. So we'll end it on that note. And just so everyone takes it in. These are some of the keys that we've come to. We put them in your hands. Can't open the door for you. You got to open it yourself and walk through it. This is you versus you. Peace and blessings. Thank you.